Living on Earth needs your support to be heard each week. Kindly give what you can today by using the donate link to the left of this page. Thanks.
Barbara Kingsolver left life in the farm country of Kentucky in the 1970s to become educated as an evolutionary biologist. But what she didn't know was that she would also become a best-selling novelist. You may know some of her titles. The Poisonwood Bible is one. Prodigal Summer is another. Now she and her husband and daughter have a volume that documents how her family carried out a vow to eat only locally grown food for 1 year. The book is called Animal Vegetable Miracle, A Year of Food Life. Her family produced about 70% of what went on their table from their own farm in Virginia, everything from tomatoes to turkeys. And what they couldn't grow, they mostly bought from local farmers. I spoke with Barbara Kingsolver recently. I asked her what motivated her and her family to become what's known as locavores, people who eat locally.
We were led into this project for so many reasons. For me, it's because I grew up in a rural community among farmers, and I've always considered the local farming economy to be important and, frankly, an important part of food security. We are now, as a nation, putting almost as much fossil fuels into our refrigerators as our cars. Every item, on average, on the American plate has traveled 1,500 miles. So add up all the items on your plate, and it's you might as well order room service from the moon. That's an incredible amount of fossil fuel, an incredible amount of carbon emissions going into the atmosphere, warming up the globe, just to get a grape from Chile, a tomato from Mexico, so that I can eat a tomato in January.
Now, you write in your book that 80% of us in America would love to eat more organic and locally grown foods, yet the American government, through the Farm Bill, gives just about all of federal money to the biggest farms in the country, and most of them grow things like corn, soybeans, and wheat far from where most of us live. Can you talk to me more about that?
I'm so glad you brought that up. U.S. taxpayers pay tens of billions of dollars every year to subsidize the production of commodity crops, which are, as you mentioned, mostly corn, wheat, and soybeans. Most of that production enters our diets almost without our notice as the ingredients of processed foods like high fructose corn syrup or feed for confinement-raised cattle and hogs. And we also, as taxpayers, subsidize the fuel costs of getting these products manufactured and shipped to the market. So it's a funny thing in this country. We think of fast food as cheap, in spite of all the fossil fuels and processing that were required to make it, while we think of simple, unprocessed organic produce as sort of elite, an expensive option. It's incredibly ironic that the U.S. government urges us to eat more fruits and vegetables, but our agricultural programs offer virtually no assistance to fruit and vegetable growers.
But what did it cost you to grow your own food and buy the rest of it locally?
You know what? We were stunned by the answer to that question. I kept really careful records, and I found out that we spent about 50 cents per person per meal to eat as splendidly as we did in this year. And I thought, this must be a mistake. So I went back and recalculated, and that was it, 50 cents a person per meal.
So for those of us who are used to having orange juice for breakfast, how were you able to pull this off? I mean, eating locally, growing it yourself or getting it from local farmers means that, for example, you're not going to have orange juice for breakfast there in Virginia.
You start by accepting this will be a paradigm shift. This will be a change in the way you think about food. And as time went by, we really learned to stop asking that question, what do I want right now? And instead start seeing each week as something like the menu in a restaurant. Look at what's available. What do they have? What's growing this week? What's fresh and delicious? And choose from that. I do want to point out that we weren't the strictest locavores. We didn't, for example, give up coffee because my husband said coffee will get you through times of no food better than food will get you through times of no coffee. And I began to understand important things about my marriage.
So Now, you were a vegetarian for many years, mm-hmm. but as part of this project, you decided to raise and slaughter your own meat. Talk to me about how and why you came to that decision.
It's really important to know that food is not just a product, but a process. There are two very different ways of producing meat. One of them is called concentrated animal feeding operations, or CAFOs. These are feedlots for cattle or metal windowless warehouses for hogs, turkeys, chickens, and so forth, where they're crowded as close as they can possibly be. And these very concentrated populations require that all of their food be milled and processed somewhere else and brought in, and then all of the concentrated waste have to be trucked out to somewhere, heaven only knows where, and these animals get fed sort of a porridge of the cheapest ingredients just for the efficiency of producing cheap meat. And also they have to be given antibiotics in order to keep them alive under conditions of extreme physiological stress. So that kind of meat I hadn't eaten for many years. There is another way, a different way of raising meat, and that is keeping these animals on pasture. And the interesting thing from an energetic point of view is that they can do all this without using a drop of gasoline. In the county where I live, we have a lot of steep, grassy pastures, and we can use this as a solar-powered industry to make meat. And that's the food that my grandparents got through the winter on, and we felt that we could do the same, and we even raised turkeys and chickens of our own.
Now, there's a great scene in your book when you are getting ready to have a party in the early spring.
Mm-hmm.
It's about this time of year, as a matter of fact.
That's right.
Around your birthday, I guess.
Yeah.
And you'd only been at this for a little while. I mean, you didn't have last year's canned goods or anything stuck in your freezer that you could trot out here.
Right. We began thinking, oh, this is a bleak time of year. May is still pretty early where we live in the mountains of southern Appalachia. There's not a lot coming up just yet. And we were thinking, oh, this is going to be the borscht party, beets and potatoes. But as a matter of fact, as happened over and over again in this project, what we found was so much more than we were looking for. There were terrific salad greens. There was asparagus. There were eggs, so we could have asparagus frittatas. There was rhubarb and strawberries, so we could have strawberry rhubarb crisp. There were lamb and, we had chicken pizza. There was so much that was just literally down the road from where we lived. So much more than we expected, and it turned out to be a terrific event because it reinforced to us that this isn't a story of deprivation. This is a story of gratitude.
Now, where you are in Virginia, you've got a farm, a lot of neighbors who are in the food business, but what about somebody who lives in, say, the city or a colder climate? What kind of advice would you offer for taking steps to eat more locally?
Being thoughtful about food life is not, of course, about growing your own. Anyone who has choices about food can exercise them with more care, even in the cities, and especially in the cities. Every grocery store that carries multiple brands will have some that are produced closer to home than others. We can all emphasize whole ingredients more and pass up processed goods that have so many hidden costs. And the next stop, of course, is the farmers market. More than half of all of us who live in the U.S. live within striking distance of a place where farmers sell their own produce. Also, many cities have community gardens. I think there are 114 of them in Manhattan alone. Any way you cut it, getting to know your own food chain is neighborly and it's healthy. It keeps your money in your own community and it keeps the land around you a little more green.
So you eat locally for a year and you live to tell about it. And the day this project was finished, did you run out for what?
Coca-Cola and moon pies? No, we didn't. We forgot to notice the day the project ended. By this time, it was just the way we lived. We have a new relationship with where we live. We are what we ate.
Barbara Kingsolver's new book is Animal Vegetable Miracle, A Year of Food Life. It was written with her husband, Stephen L. Hopp, and daughter, Camille Kingsolver. Barbara, thank you so much.
Thanks. Bye.
And you can hear more of our conversation with Barbara Kingsolver, as well as readings from the new book and some of her family's favorite homegrown recipes at our website, loe.org. You can hear our program anytime on our website or get a download for your MP3 player. And of course, the address is loe.org. And your comments are always welcome. You can send them to us at comments@loe.org. Once again, that's comments@loe.org. Our postal address is 20 Holland Street, Somerville, Massachusetts, 02144. And you can call our listener line anytime at 800-218-9988. That's 800-218-9988. Coming up, this year's winner of the Goldman Environmental Prize for Africa is a human hammer against poaching and poverty in Zambia. That's just ahead on Living on Earth.
Support for Living on Earth comes from the Cedar Tree Foundation and from the Richard and Rhoda Goldman Fund, celebrating the 2007 Goldman Environmental Prize winners. Learn more about each winner at www.goldmanprize.org. This is Living on Earth on PRI, Public Radio International.